Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. You're confident when it comes to your work and life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same confidence when it comes to refinancing your existing mortgage or buying a home. It lets you understand all the details so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Ray Suarez, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last year, he described the suggestion of Russian collusion as disgusting. But just months before, he had arranged to meet with a Russian lawyer and get dirt on Hillary Clinton during the presidential campaign. Donald Trump Jr. is at the center of it all right now. Is this a smoking gun or a whole lot of nothing? Could placing a Russian lawyer at Trump Tower with Donald Jr. and Jared Kushner rock the Trump presidency? This hour on Point, we look at what we know and what we don't know, the emails, the facts, and the possible consequences Donald Jr. could face down the line. You can join us on air or online. Listeners, what's your take? Is this collusion, obstruction of justice, or just what happens during campaigns? How does it make you feel about our current administration? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Mark Mazzetti, Washington Investigations Editor for the New York Times. Mark, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Ray.
Let's listen to this. In an interview on CNN's State of the Union on July 24th, 2016, over a month after his email exchange with Rob Goldstone, Donald Trump Jr. spoke with Jake Tapper about Clinton campaign manager Robbie Mook's suggestion that the Russian government was attempting to help the Trump campaign. Here's how Don Jr. responded.
It just goes to show you their exact moral compass. I mean, they'll say anything to be able to win this. I mean, this is time and time again, lie after lie. You notice he won't say, well, I say this. We hear experts. You know, his house cat at home once said that this is what's happening with the Russians. It's disgusting. It's so phony.
What do we know, Mark Mazzetti, about what Donald Trump Jr. knew at the moment he was saying these things?
Well, we certainly know now that when he said that, he had already had a meeting a month earlier with a Russian lawyer, along with some of the top campaign aides in the Trump presidential campaign, to solicit derogatory information about Hillary Clinton and the Clinton campaign. We don't know, still at this point, what became of that meeting, what happened or what came out of it or what information was exchanged, but certainly that meeting had taken place, and we know, of course, that Donald Trump Jr., took the meeting, arranged the meeting, knowing that this information had been coming from the Russian government, or at least that was the proposal that it was coming from the Russian government, and that was seemed to be something that made him particularly interested.
Who were the emails that initiated the exchange from? Tell us who this guy is and how he knows Donald Trump Jr.
The emails came from a man named Rob Goldstone, who is a publicist who seems to have known, first met Donald Trump Jr. around the time of the Miss Universe pageant in 2013 in Moscow. The reason there's a connection there was because Goldstone's client is someone named Emin Argalev, who's a pop star in Russia. And both Emin and his father, Aris, who is a big real estate magnate in Russia, met Trump and the Trump family in 2013. They were actually partners in trying to bring this pageant to Moscow. So all of this cast of characters first met, we think, around that time when Trump was bringing the pageant to Moscow.
Donald Jr. now says in his public interview since the release of the emails that nothing was exchanged, that nothing of value was possessed by the Russian lawyer in question. But at the time of the offer from Goldstone, it was pretty clear. It wasn't particularly ambivalent what was being offered. The part of Russia and its government's support for Mr. Trump as these revelations were described by Goldstone, things that, quote, would incriminate Hillary. And to that, how did Donald Trump Jr. respond?
I love it, is what he said. And then another thing that I think has not gotten enough attention, he said, was that he seemed that he'd be particularly interested in this information, or he thought this information might be particularly interesting later in the summer, which I thought is a sort of savvy political thing to say, right? If you have incriminating information about your opponent and the general election is not until November, it's less useful in June than it is later in the summer as they get closer. So, you know, there did seem to be, based on these emails, a degree of calculation about not only he wanted the information, but how and when they might want to use it.
In interviews with Russian media, Aras and Emin Agalarov have speculated that perhaps the emails themselves are fake. How do we know that that's not true?
Well, Donald Trump Jr. himself says they weren't fake. He put the emails out yesterday on Twitter. There's been certainly no argument from the Trump camp that they were fake. And over the last 5 days, we heard several different explanations of the meeting and the story, but never since yesterday that the emails are fake.
In the hours, we can still count by hours. It's only a couple of days since these things became public. Since the revelation of the emails were made, McClatchy's reporters are now reporting that investigators looking into the Trump-Russia connection are focused on whether Trump's campaign pointed Russian cyber operatives to key states. And the reports quote people familiar, and that Russia had Democratic voter files and precinct data. Are you working on anything like that from your end?
Well, it's certainly been a question among the various investigators, both in, particularly in the House and the Senate, whether there was any coordination on the spread and the targeting of so-called fake news, news stories that were generated, many of them by people affiliated with the Russian government, and where that targeting may have happened. In other words, the Russians produced information, and maybe they had some help in terms of targeting where, which precincts, which districts that information might be most politically useful. Now, there has been no evidence of this. There has been no, there have been suggestions, there has been smoke, and it is one of the things they're looking at. But we have to be careful in these cases to say what people are looking at as opposed to what has been proven.
Back to the meeting at Trump Tower that involved, by his own admission, Jared Kushner, Paul Manafort, and Donald Trump Jr. The president's son says nothing came of it, and they broke up the meeting, and Ms. Veselnitskaya went her way. Right now, the only version of the events of that day we have are Donald Trump's, correct?
That's correct. I mean, the only public discussion of that day has come from him. And, you know, in the course of our reporting over the last week, we're trying to get more information about the meeting, what happened. I mean, everyone agrees that it was not lengthy, and everyone seems to agree that the lawyer brought up some issues that the Trump campaign thought to be completely tangential. What we don't know, though, of course, is whether, you know, what information was passed and whether there was any follow-up and whether this was the beginning of something else.
At the very least, it contradicts both Donald Trump Jr.'s and Jared Kushner's descriptions of the events of 2016, doesn't it?
Sure. I mean, if you think about just a few months ago, Donald Trump said in a press conference, me and my campaign had absolutely no contact whatsoever with Russians, period. And what we've spent the last 5 months doing is documenting contacts, meetings, not only during the election, but also during the transition. And you know, at the very least, there was far more extensive contact with Russians during this period than the campaign and now the administration has let on. One key, the key question, of course, is what do all these meetings add up to? What do all these contacts add up to? And that's even in light of the revelations in the last couple of days, it is still the central question.
Stay tuned. Mark Mazzetti, and Washington Investigations Editor for The New York Times, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Ray.
Joining me now is Jill Wine Banks. She was a Watergate special prosecutor, served as general counsel to the U.S. Army from 1977 to 1980. Jill, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Ray. Thank you for having me here.
Let's look at the laws that guide elections in the United States. Is it illegal to meet with a foreigner to talk about national campaigns?
It isn't illegal to meet with a foreigner. It is illegal to take anything of value from any foreign national, let alone from a foreign government. And there's every evidence that Natalia was an attorney for the Russian government. But even if she wasn't, she was a foreign national.
But if, as Donald Trump Jr. says, there wasn't a proffer, but nothing actually changed hands, is that illegal?
It is. We have conspiracy laws in America, and if you conspire to violate the law and you take an act in furtherance of that conspiracy, then you have violated the law. So here you have a clear message in the email saying, I have official government documents that are incriminating to Hillary that would help your father, and I want to help your father. It's part of the Russian government's effort to support him. And you set up a meeting, that's an act in furtherance, and then you have the meeting. Even if you end up not liking what's proffered, you have violated the campaign laws by seeking to accept something of value. And there has been a lot written about this being of value, the negative information. So that's a violation.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. With Rocket Mortgage, you can apply simply and understand fully so you can mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Ray Suarez, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking Donald Trump Jr. What seeking out dirt on Hillary Clinton from a Russian lawyer means for the Russia investigation, possibly for his father's presidency. You can join the conversation. Have these latest revelations changed both the investigation and the inevitable defense from the White House? Are you now more convinced that there's something there? You can follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. In an interview Monday with NBC News, Kellyanne Conway, counselor to the president and his campaign manager, responded to the allegations of collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign.
I can tell you as the campaign manager in the last months of the campaign, the winning campaign, that we did not meet with Russian officials. And there's no collusion.
Richard Painter, former ethics lawyer under President George W. Bush, criticized Donald Trump Jr. on MSNBC Sunday for meeting with the Russian attorney.
This is unacceptable. This borders on treason if it is not itself treason, depending on whether the New York Times story is true. But this is a very, very serious situation. We should not treat this lightly. And the fact it was a 10-minute meeting is irrelevant. You can accomplish a lot by way of damaging your own country, assisting an adversary in espionage inside the United States in 10 minutes. And we need to make sure this never happens again.
Joining me now via Skype from Dallas is Lee Speakerman, president and CEO of Speakerman Media. He's a Fox News commentator and former presidential campaign advisor to Newt Gingrich. His Twitter handle is at Speakerman. Lee, welcome to On Point.
Great to be with you, Ray. Thank you.
What should we make of this latest news and these emails released by Donald Trump Jr. himself?
Well, first of all, it's I think anybody that watched Donald Jr. on the Hannity interview last night would see that he was not defensive. He was very authentic. He didn't look like he was hiding anything. And while the New York Times intended to dribble out those emails a little at a time in multiple stories, he took the initiative, took the bull by the horn, and released all the emails, the entire email thread. So I think that there speaks to motive and mindset. But I do want to just step back for a second here. First of all, let's look at the kind of the geopolitical situation. We keep hearing words irresponsibly thrown around like treason. Let's look at who our real adversaries are in the world. North Korea, which is about to be able to deliver a nuclear missile and could already close to being able to set off an EMP explosion in our atmosphere, which could shut down a lot of American electronics. We have Iran still developing nuclear weapons. We have China, which has a $500 billion goods surplus with the U.S. and is literally sucking the life out of our economy, and that's been going on for decades. So you have three countries there that have done things that are very deleterious to our country directly and are in enormous immediate threats to us. Russia is not even on that radar screen. So let's start there. Secondly, in World War II, we won World War II by allying with Stalin, who was a genocidal demon that makes Putin look like Justin Trudeau. You know, sometimes you work with people, you ally with people that are not run by the most desirable leaders in the world. And Christina van den Heuvel, who is the publisher of The Nation and knows more about Russia than just about anybody talking about Russia, not exactly a right-wing Trump fan, made very clear that we can't have another Cold War. We have got to work with Russia. That's very important. Russia is the only other country on the planet that can evaporate humanity.
Well, Lee, let me stop you right there, because I don't think anybody denies that it's a complicated world where other countries don't have the United States' interests at heart. But at the heart of this conversation is a proffer from a friend of Donald Trump Jr., Rob Goldstone, who is also a friend of people well-connected in Russia, who offers Donald Trump something that is, quote, part of Russia and its government's support for Mr. Trump. Donald Trump Jr. doesn't say in the email exchange, oh, no, get that out of here. Let's stay 100 miles away from that. Don't take things from the Russians. He says 8 words in response. If it's what you say, I love it.
Well, Ray, it's never good. It's never acceptable when a foreign nation attempts to get involved in the U.S. campaign or the election. That's a given. Let's stipulate that. But, you know, Donald Trump Jr. and the entire Donald Trump operation, including now President Trump, are not politicians. They don't look at things quite the way other people do. They are outsiders, and things that would perhaps sound alarm bells with people in Washington wouldn't necessarily to outsiders. But let's also look at the fact that Donald Trump Jr. Did not take any information from this woman. She was not a representative of the Kremlin. It should be noted that U.S. intelligence didn't even know about this woman. She was granted a visa and a waiver to get a visa into the United States, which put her under greater scrutiny, and she was allowed in. So she wasn't being monitored. So obviously she was not seen as a threat to the United States. And what Donald Trump Jr. did, quite frankly, is he looked and listened to the sitting president of the United States at the time, President Obama, who had lampooned Mitt Romney in 2012 when he said Russia was a threat to the United States. He said, I think in the 1970s, want their foreign policy back. They made fun of Romney. He had done things. He had taken missiles out of Poland or shelved the idea of having missiles in Poland and Czechoslovakia, which the Russians wanted to happen. He had invited Russia into Syria and outsourced part of our Middle East foreign policy and opening the door to the horrific war crimes that have occurred there that Russia was involved in. So this all happened under President Obama. That's not exactly how you treat a major adversary.
But not exactly anything to do with Donald Trump Jr. It's all very interesting history. It's all very interesting context.
It has a lot to do with it.
But it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that a senior person in the Trump campaign, the now president's own son, his son-in-law, who is now on the payroll and working in the White House, and the then campaign manager all agreed to this meeting, all understanding what had been proffered in the original exchange with Rob Goldstone.
They understood that, but again, all he wanted to do was listen to what he said, and it is very important to understand the backdrop. If Russia is not an enemy, if they're not involved in combat against the United States, then this whole idea of treason is off the table. And Jeffrey Toobin, Turley, Dershowitz have all said that there's not a crime here. That's a ridiculous statement by Tim Kaine and by others. So he wanted to hear what they had to say. No information was transferred, and again, Russia was not even, and certainly isn't even today, among the top threats to the United States. It is not an enemy. So to put it in that context is extremely important.
Lee Speakerman is with us from Dallas. Jill Winebanks is still with us from Chicago. Jill Winebanks, in law, how does intent operate? Does it change things? And if intent is there, and action is not, if, as Lee Speakerman suggests, Donald Trump Jr. is telling the truth and nothing of value was exchanged, where are we?
Well, first of all, there are so many things that I feel I must comment on in what has just been said, but I'll answer your question first and then go on to those. Intent is an element of almost any crime, and if there's no action taken, that's a problem. But here we have proof of an action. He intended to get information from the Russian government. And remember, this was official documents and information coming directly from the Crown Prosecutor of Russia, from the Russian government. And he was told that the woman was a Russian government lawyer. So he intended to get information from a foreign national, from a foreign government. He met with her, which is an action, and we don't know that he didn't get information from her. We do know that he said in his email, and I think your first speaker, Mr. Mazzetti, was quite correct, that it hasn't gotten enough attention. He not only said, I love it, especially later in the summer. That is very important because when was this information released? They met on June 9th. It was released on the eve of the Democratic National Convention. It was weaponized to do the maximum damage that it could possibly do to the Democrats. It led to the resignation of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. It created chaos. It was extremely harmful to the Democratic process, not just to the Democratic Party, but to democracy. And to say that Russia is not an enemy is not correct. I had the opportunity to work with Mr. Putin in the late 90s when I was chairman of Motorola's cellular operating company in St. Petersburg, Russia. And I can say things have changed dramatically from the 90s. And now Russia is a country that is dedicated to destroying NATO, to destroying democracy. It is definitely not our friend. And it was intending, according to these emails and according to every single intelligence agency that has looked at this, to hurt the campaign of Hillary Clinton and to help elect Donald Trump. And it succeeded in doing that. So there's plenty of action that will guide this. And going further, when your question is about the law, in addition to any violation of campaign laws and conspiracy laws, can't we look at this as a political question, as a voter's issue? Let's look at the morals that should guide this country. How do we want to be run? And the argument that these were amateurs, that they didn't know what they were doing. Do we really want amateurs running the country? Don't we want people who know things? And some things are so inherently wrong that it seems to me that anyone would have known that taking information intended by a foreign government to sway the election is wrong. It's just per se illegal and wrong. It's immoral. And those are things that are very, very important.
Lee Speakerman, let me get a quick response from you, and then we'll go to the phones.
Well, all I'm going to say is, first of all, if there's such a bright line between what political operatives should be doing and getting involved with foreign governments, why was the Democratic National Committee directly collaborating with Ukrainian operatives under the direct direction of Poroshenko to undermine President Trump, to try to trump up this entire, pardon the pun, this entire Russia story during the campaign? So you had the Democrats working actively, according to Politico, with the Ukraine to undermine Trump. So, you know, this whole idea that they are purer than the driven snow and the Trump campaign was doing something untoward is ridiculous. Secondly, I'm not an attorney. I do know, as I said, that Jeffrey Toobin, Jonathan Turley, Dershowitz have said there's no crime here. If conveying opposition research is conveying something of value and violating campaign finance laws, then boy, we have hundreds and hundreds and perhaps thousands of campaign law violators in this country, never mind around the world. So that's specious in and of itself. And there cannot be a conspiracy unless there's a conspiracy to commit a crime. There is no crime here, as some of the most illustrious legal minds in this country, by the way, I believe all of them are Hillary supporters or certainly not Trump supporters. We know Dershowitz voted for Hillary Clinton, and they say there's not a crime here. You cannot have a conspiracy without a crime. And I just want to say quickly, Donald Trump's own party was trying to keep him from getting the nomination in June of 16. The media had locked arms trying to demonize him and destroy the campaign. The leftist establishment obviously was trying to destroy the campaign. So, you know, frankly, when you're up against a $1.5 billion juggernaut in the Hillary Clinton campaign, maybe you listen to things that you wouldn't otherwise. But that is just a demonstration of frankly, the entire political environment in our country, how caustic it's become, frankly, what it takes for an establishment and a non-establishment outsider candidate to even attempt to upend this atrocious order that we've had in place that's undermined American workers, that has directly compromised U.S. security. Unlike the implicit threats from Russia, these things were allowed to fester under the Obama administration, unfortunately. And I'm not with those that think we should be wantonly demonizing former President Obama. But let's just be honest. He did not treat Russia like an enemy. He invited them into Syria. He took out, he shelved plans to put in missiles that they didn't want in Eastern Europe, which alarmed our ally and a NATO member, Poland.
We're not litigating the Obama administration right now. We're talking about Donald Trump, what he did and what he didn't do. Let's go to Buffalo, New York. Nate is standing by. Nate, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray. I have 2 points. One is that I see two, at least, clear criminal violations. One is if you look at the campaign finance law, it mentions promises explicit or implicit from a foreign party. So saying Russia wants to give you information and then you saying I want that information, that constitutes a criminal violation as I read the law. Two, there's the disclosure forms. We have yet another meeting that hasn't made it onto disclosure forms like it should have. And my second point quickly is that the other side doing it is not a legal defense. It's not a valid defense. If one gang member appears in court and says, well, I only killed the member from the other gang because he killed a member from my gang first, it doesn't matter. It's still murder.
Nate, thanks a lot for your call. Let me get quick responses from Jill Winebanks and Lee Speakerman. Jill?
I agree with Nate very much, and definitely not a defense. If there is any evidence to support the allegations made about the Ukraine and the Democratic campaign, they should also be investigated. But right now, that's a diversion from what's in front of us right now. The man who is the president of the United States may be involved in colluding with the Russian government to upturn the democratic process of elections, and that is a serious issue that needs to be investigated right now. And yes, one of the points Nate mentioned about the disclosure forms seems to be getting lost. One of the Trump administration's favorite tactics is diversion. And so we go on from one episode to another, from one violation to another, and we keep forgetting the old ones. But of course,
I'm going to have to jump in there because I have to give Lee Speakerman a chance. Okay. We have about 40 seconds left before the break. Lee?
Well, Jill is an esteemed attorney. I challenge her to name one time in campaign finance law when passing on opposition research was treated or prosecuted as a thing of value or an illegal campaign contribution. That, frankly, is ridiculous. Listening to opposition research or dirt that somebody might have on an opponent does not constitute receiving an illegal campaign contribution. It has never been prosecuted, so there's no history there whatsoever. If she can find a case, then I'd love to hear that.
Well, Jill Weinbanks, we are going to have to leave it there. Watergate Special Prosecutor, thanks for being with us. And Lee Speakerman, Fox News commentator and former presidential campaign advisor to Newt Gingrich, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We're discussing Donald Trump Jr., his admission that he was digging for dirt on Hillary Clinton last year during a meeting with a Russian lawyer. When we come back from the break, we'll look at the potential impact on the Trump presidency from the Wall Street Journal's Gerald Seib. I'm Ray Suarez, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Donald Trump Jr.'s emails and whether it changes the game in the Russia investigation. You can join the conversation. Is this the smoking gun, hard evidence, or sensationalism? Where does the Russia cloud leave the president's administration and American democracy? Ken writes, what happens if President Trump pardons Donald Trump Jr.? Probably nothing. Will writes, okay, so what if you lie about that meeting for over a year? What about basic morality? Is illegality the only barometer? Christina Clifton writes, it's perfectly legal to collude with Americans to affect a U.S. election, and it's legal for the U.S. to interfere in foreign elections. Not talking about moral equivalence, I'm just talking about the law. Dan writes, there's every indication from his statements after the meeting that Trump Sr. knew about everything discussed. Wes writes, stop trotting out the Trump's not a politician excuse. He was a candidate and now the president, and the rules still apply to him. Christian writes, doesn't it matter if Trump Jr. got any info from Russia? Key point is that he accepted the meeting. It doesn't matter if Trump Jr. got any info from Russia. Key point is he accepted the meeting. Even implicit solicitation equals jail. And Mari writes, anybody know how many lawyers are currently repping the Trump family? Ballpark figure? What's the average billable rate per hour, and how many hours per day does each lawyer put in? It's all on America's dime, so I believe I have the right to know dollar figures for Trump Inc.'s legal expenses to date. Jerry Seib, Washington bureau chief of the Wall Street Journal, joins us now. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray.
What changes after the revelation of the Trump Jr. email exchange?
Well, look, I think the one thing that changed yesterday, well, actually two things I think changed yesterday. The first was the idea that you could argue the possibility of collusion between somebody in Trump world and Russians in the 2016 campaign, that idea was ludicrous. That idea died. I mean, there's enough black and white evidence here of a transactional proposal being accepted. People at the Russian government have information. They want to pass it on to you. Yes, bring it on. But you can no longer argue that it's ludicrous to explore the question of collusion. That's the one thing that's changed. And I think the second thing that's changed, and maybe this was confirming a reality more than a change, but if there was any notion that this whole question of Russia's role in the 2016 election was going to become a dead letter, it was going to dry up and blow away soon, I think that idea is dead now, because clearly this provides a whole bunch of new fuel to the investigation. It also suggests that maybe people within the Trump world are, you know, turning on each other, and that suggests maybe more stuff will be coming. This is going to be fodder not just for us in the press, but more importantly for investigative bodies for a while to come. So if there was a thought that this was going to be wrapped up and disposed of quickly, this whole question, I think that's probably gone now as well.
What does that, what you just described, do to the practical day-to-day work of trying to run an executive branch, work with a Congress, and enact an agenda?
Well, you know, I go back to the Reagan White House during the Iran-Contra scandal, and I happened to cover it, and I've talked to people about it a lot in the years since. And, you know, they were at a point where they decided they needed to create almost two channels for operating in the White House. One was dealing with Iran-Contra scandal issues, questions, investigative matters,
and a separate channel for dealing with the day-to-day business of actually running the government and running the country, and tackle it that way. And I, you know, it may be that we're sort of at that point here, that there has to be, I think, more separation between this question, which clearly rattles and infuriates people in the White House and seems to infuriate the president himself, and the other business of governance. And I think particularly if what I said earlier is correct, which is that this is not going away soon, then I think you probably need a better system for handling both things simultaneously.
When Lee Speakerman was on earlier, he referenced Donald Trump Jr.'s interview on Fox News last night. He sat down with Sean Hannity and admitted that in hindsight, he might have gone about things differently.
In retrospect, I probably would have done things a little differently. Again, this is before the Russia mania. This is before they were building it up in the press. For me, this was opposition research. They had something, you know, maybe concrete evidence to all the stories I'd been hearing about, but they were probably underreported for, you know, years, not just during the campaign. So I think I wanted to hear it out. But really, it went nowhere, and it was apparent that that wasn't what the meeting was actually about.
Mark is calling now from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray.
Hi. What's on your mind, Mark?
I really enjoy the NPR. What I have been confronted with lately and with a lot of people I know are basically turning this radio station off, and they're turning off a lot of the mainstream media because of all the speculative arguments and all of the basic hatred that is dispensed against the president. Because, you know, everybody knows the guy isn't perfect, but the speculation and judge and jury before facts, people are exhausted and they're turning off.
Well, Mark, let me ask you what you would have us do. Did you hear anything during the course of this program that indicates hatred toward the president? Have I said anything that indicates hatred toward the president?
Well, you know, I can tell definitely what your viewpoint is and your challenge is, and your challenge is towards the president. It is not an unbiased challenge. The challenge is not like a mediator. It is a cheerleader for a particular side.
Did Donald Trump Jr. say in an email to Rob Goldstone, "If it's what you say, I love it"?
Okay.
Well, I mean, is that something we shouldn't cover until this is completely adjudicated and then look back at it in retrospect weeks or months later?
Yeah, sure. And covering a story or delving into or even having an opinion is that's all great. It's what makes America America. But when the side is so slanted on the projection and the propaganda, people are literally getting exhausted. I'll give you a quick example and then I'll go. It's, you know, I have a relative who did not like Obama at all, and he was obsessed with it. And it doesn't matter if I agree with him or not. It got sickening listening to the obsession of disdain. And well, that's where I see NPR, and that's where I see the mainstream media.
Okay.
It's exhausting.
Thanks a lot for your call, Mark from Albuquerque, New Mexico. John is with us now from Baltimore, Maryland. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ray. That's exactly my point, is that if this was Hillary Clinton and the scandal with the emails, the Republicans would be on her heels with the flames of hell to get her impeached, locked up, investigated to the end of the world. But when the Republicans are at fault, they will always hide and point the blame to the black man, or this was the problem from a previous administration. But they're at wrong here, and they refuse to put the same pressure on Trump that they vigorously, adamantly, every single day of the campaign got on Hillary Clinton about emails. This is Russia trying to influence our elections. And they were up in arms with an email. I'm disgusted with the Republicans and their supporters who claim that you guys are biased. You guys are giving the truth. And the only reason why I listen to NPR is because you give the truth. And thank you very much. The world the state needs you.
John, I'm going to stop it there because I want to turn to Jerry Seib and ask whether these two callers, John and Mark, present, in their very words, part of the predicament for the Trump administration going forward. That on one level, there may be a certain amount of public exhaustion with small incremental revelations that may or may not proceed from today. And then on the other hand, there's a large number of Americans saying, I need to know what happened here.
Well, I don't think it's the predicament for the Trump administration entirely. It's a predicament for all of us. I mean, you know, this has become a kind of a standard dynamic, which is, you know, when stories like this break, some people think that it's time to get harder on the president. And, you know, I can tell you my own responses from readers about things I write. Some people say you're too soft on Donald Trump, and then others say you guys are obsessed with Donald Trump, and it's a mainstream media myth or fiction that you're writing about. And, you know, that's to be expected to some extent, but it's a pretty extreme division right now within the country. So I think that that's where everybody is, the Trump administration, those of us in the press, and frankly, both parties in Congress at this point. So, you know, it's an uncomfortable and in some ways unpleasant and unproductive state, but that's, I think, where the national debate is to some extent right now.
Natalia Veselnitskaya, the attorney said to be at the heart of this meeting with Donald Trump, is not a nobody, not somebody who was representing people in traffic court or doing real estate closings in Russia. She's someone who is well-known and well-connected to big personalities and big money in Russia. The fact that she wanted to talk about the Magnitsky Act, we haven't talked about that yet this hour, but why is that significant?
Well, it's significant because the Magnitsky Act was an act passed by Congress that imposed sanctions on Russia because of the way a human rights activist in Russia was treated. And in response to the Magnitsky Act, the Russians retaliated by essentially cutting off what had been a fairly common and you know, sort of widely thought to be humane practice of Americans adopting Russian children who needed homes. And so as a result, the debate over whether the Magnitsky Act was justified or not, and whether it should continue or not, or whether the what happened in the adoption process in Russia as a result of that was justified or was an overreaction of the Magnitsky Act, has been going on in the background for several years now. This lawyer was involved in the effort to get the Magnitsky Act overturned, and that is a legitimate public policy debate. It was engaged in long before Donald Trump's candidacy appeared on the horizon. But that's one of the ways in which she entered this scene. And there was an assertion that that's what the meeting with Donald Trump Jr. was supposed to be about. The problem is that's not what the emails that were released by Donald Trump Jr. yesterday indicated. Those emails indicated that he was asked to convene a meeting on the basis of receiving information from the upper reaches of the Russian government that had to do with Hillary Clinton's campaign. So the Magnitsky Act is floating in the background in part because of the work that this Russian lawyer had been doing, but it is not clear that that's what this was about.
Our next stop is Ames, Iowa. Mike, welcome to the program. Hi, Mike.
Thank you so much for having me on.
What do you got?
Hi, thanks for... I'm calling because I'm honestly just baffled. I'm so confused on this because this is blatant, obvious evidence of collusion and obstruction of justice on Trump's part for firing Comey. This is beyond belief. And any time you bring up these issues and point out the obvious facts that something illegal has happened, the Trump base just fires back with this is fake media. They completely reject any negative news as being possible of being reality. And I'm just so confused as to how we can get so far when we've got people, Jared Kushner, Jeff Sessions, Paul Manafort, Mike Flynn, every one of these people lied under threat of perjury on these disclosure documents about meetings with Russia. And then they come back with, oh, I just forgot. This is absolutely unacceptable. And I don't know where to turn on this or how to proceed as far as getting this forward. And the only thing I can think that comes to mind is a quote from Thomas Jefferson when he said, when you hear people condemning a free press, you are hearing the words of a tyrant. And that's what I see this as. I see Donald Trump as a tyrant in tyrant wannabe, at least. And the entire administration is just so corrupt.
Jerry Seib, this is not something that's going to be as easily parried, is it, as some of the things that have happened over the last 6 to 9 months?
No, and I to me, that was one of the significant turns in this story yesterday, was that there is enough suggestion in that email chain of willingness to cooperate with the Russian government that I think investigators and others will say, well, we have to take the whole picture seriously and slow down and find out what else is there. Now, that's not to pass judgment on anybody, and I am not a lawyer. I would not even begin to suggest I know whether what transpired it was illegal in any way. I don't think that's the point right now. The point right now is that there was a disclosure from Donald Trump Jr. himself that suggests there is reason to look more deeply. And that's where this is. And that's, I think, a significant turn. It's not the final one, and it doesn't mean much beyond that definitively, at least right now. And, you know, look, Ray, in terms of the press being attacked, I mean, you and I both know that if you didn't want to make people uncomfortable, this is the wrong line of work to go in. I mean, you got to get used to being attacked. I was a foreign correspondent for a while. I've seen lots of serious efforts to squelch the press here and abroad. That just goes with the territory, and I don't think any of us can have thin skins. We just have to do our jobs. It doesn't mean getting carried away. It means just doing your job and then accepting that some people will love it, some people will hate it, and some people will want you to go further, and some people will want you to stop short. And that just goes with the territory. We are in a particularly acute phase of that phenomenon right now.
Before I let you go, what big thing are you trying to determine or chase down or establish for yourself that represents the next step in this story? What are you trying to find now that you don't know?
I mean, I guess the obvious question is whether there's active measures by some Russian entity to aid the Trump campaign beyond simply saying we're for you or here's some information we have for you. And I think that's what the investigators are trying to get to as well. And maybe they'll come up with nothing. But as I said, I think the need for a serious look was amplified yesterday.
Jerry Seib is Washington bureau chief for The Wall Street Journal. Jerry, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be with you, Ray.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Ray Suarez, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.